What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Today is the Financially Free Friday edition, and today I've got Jake with me. Welcome, Jake.
What's up, everybody? Good to be here.
Jake always makes fun of my intro, my what's up, everybody, but hey, it's my tagline. So we're going to be talking about some fun stuff today, I think. We're titling this Friends Don't Let Friends Skip Leg Day, the Finance Edition, because there is a clear pyramid, I would say. That's the best way to visualize it. A pyramid that you're building when you're working on your finances and you're building your financial picture. And there's some very clear, like, foundational pieces that we need to do before we move on to some of the, like, sexy stuff, like investing and, like, you know, getting real interesting with tax strategy. Like, there's just some foundational things that a lot of people sometimes skip or think are too boring to focus on. So we're going to talk about some of those things. We're not going to be boring today, though. And we'll move along the line to talk through, like, how we could gradually move up that pyramid and continue to build a really, really healthy financial foundation and a healthy financial picture overall. So, Jake, you are head of the dental planning team in your company. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your financial planning background, like what you do for dentists, and then how we're going to jump into some of these fun topics today.
Yeah, that's right. Talking about finances with dentists can feel like pulling teeth. No, I really enjoy working with dentists. So most of the dentists that we work with are on the younger end, of course, because they tend to have a lot of student loans. And so combining the student loan management, the strategy with their personal finances outside of the student loans, and with all of the goals that dentists tend to want to achieve, like purchasing a practice, buying their forever home, all of these things are it's just extremely fun to plan around. And there's just such a variety of folks out there in the dentistry space. So yeah, I absolutely love working with dentists. And my background, although I do go to the dentist, of course, every 6 months, but
you better.
I'm not a former dentist or anything like that. But I worked in the industry here, the financial planning industry, for about 9 years now, in different kind of capacities. I had my own firm at one point, and then I had joined SLP doing student loan consulting. So I'm along for the student loan planner ride. This is great.
Yeah. And dentists do have the highest balances of student loans on average that we work with. So student loans are definitely a big first step in somebody's financial plan. That is also kind of the first introduction a lot of people get to finance, which is a really sad, you know, scary introduction to finance a lot of times. And you're totally right. Like, the folks we tend to work with are folks who are at the beginning stages of their financial planning journey. So they're really trying to balance a lot of priorities. Like, they're trying to get started with their career. They're young. Their, you know, marriage might be down the line. They might be thinking about kids. They might be trying to figure out if they want to be a practice owner or just in any other profession, like trying to figure out like where your career is going and what next steps you need to be taking and buying houses. Like, there's a lot of things that are competing for your dollars early on. And that's exactly who we work with, which in our world, we feel like this is a really, really, really important place to be working with folks on their finances, because there's a lot of different financial professionals out there. And this is probably why financial planning or a financial advisor can be such a kind of confusing thing, because there's so many different ways to go about financial planning or calling yourself a financial advisor, where one advisor might really only just focus on insurance, but also call themselves a financial planner, financial advisor. And then on the other side, you know, there might be someone who just focuses on investments, or somebody who just focuses on retirement distribution planning.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's just so many different types of financial professionals out there. But where I think where we shine is we are comprehensive planners, where we do not just the investments, not just the insurance, but we're really focusing on the whole picture, right? So everything. And
that's right.
There might be a fitness analogy in here somewhere.
Yeah. You know, a personal trainer isn't just there to, it's not like a bicep trainer, right? So we're really like trying to hit every body part, and including the core, including cardio, you know, everything that you don't see too. And so I think
holistic.
Holistic. Yeah, that's right. I would say that the professions we work with, there's a lot of specialists inside of those professions, right? Mm-hmm. Like a podiatrist. So you know exactly what a podiatrist does, or orthodontist on the dentistry side. You know exactly what they do. At least the general public has a good idea of what they do. For financial advisors, that's not really the case, right? Because there's not really a lot of regulations around who can call themselves financial advisors. And so it's really important that folks work with someone that is all-encompassing, including not just the insurance side, but also the investment side, also touching on estate planning. And we're going to touch on pretty much all of those, at least a little bit, today in the pyramid.
Yeah, so let's start to visualize this pyramid, and we'll start to branch out from these different stacks that we're going to talk about. So let's talk about the very beginning of your financial plan. Now, this is totally still going to be relevant to you if you feel like you've already kind of passed foundational stages of financial planning, because a lot of times we find that there are some pieces missing or that are not adequate anymore because they haven't been updated or looked at in a really long time. So the foundation, think about this as like the most important, I would say, arguably, like the most important part to your pyramid. It is the, you know, if you're thinking about building a house, it's like the concrete that we're pouring. Like if there's cracks in that foundation, at some point your house is going to have some kind of really catastrophic issue. If we're talking about fitness, don't skip leg day, right? Let's start at the beginning. I still think that analogy is pretty funny.
Yeah, these are the things that you typically can't really see, right? So it's not like you're buying a car and everybody can see the car you're driving, right? So it's like, these are the things that are kind of hidden in the background. The boring things. And it's like the cardio version or the leg day, like Megan had mentioned. Hey, I work out all the time, about at least 4 days a week. I try to. It's the way that I kind of burn off some steam, et cetera. And I don't skip leg day. Even though it might seem like it, because I have a genetic leg deficiency, I would say, right? So no matter what I do, everything else looks more in shape, right? So there's definitely people out there where they're working on these things, but you just can't really tell, right? So
yeah. Well, and in finance too, it's like the boring stuff. So the foundation, let's kind of list out some of the things that foundationally we have to have as part of our plan to build on top of. So I would say cash flow is really kind of the lifeblood of a financial plan. And budget is a really gross word. A lot of people hate that word. They cringe when they think about it.
Not the B word.
Yeah, not the B word. It feels restrictive. But I like to use the term cash flow planning, which is really just understanding like the income coming in, the expenses going out. You know, where are we spending? Are we within healthy parameters or not? I try to simplify it that way. So not to say that every dollar has to be accounted for, but we need to understand where money is going so we're not overextending ourselves, because that's where credit card debt comes into play, which is pretty detrimental to a plan. Managing our debt, I think, is another foundational piece to your plan. That's why we always start with student loans, right? Like every client we've worked with, our first meeting is having a conversation about student loans, because it is such a big part of the financial plan for somebody who has a very large balance. And we have to get that right so we can know how to proceed with the rest of the plan. So we can kind of also free up some space in our brain for like what we can move on to. Next would be emergency reserves, like having emergency money set aside, making sure that we've got, you know, I recommend 3 to 6 months of necessary living expenses to have on hand. Is that what you do too?
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It depends on the situation, right? So at least get 1 month in first. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll meet with folks that have obviously gone to school for the majority of their life, if not a very close to majority of their life. And so a lot of times they feel left behind, right? So they find it in terms of like, they kind of play catch up in terms of like how much their investment portfolio should be, et cetera. And then we'll meet with them for the initial meeting, and they'll have like a couple $100 in the bank sometimes, like a portfolio of individual stocks. And it'll be something that like, it's almost like they skipped up to the pyramid. They skipped a bunch of levels of the pyramid and they didn't start with the foundation. And that is just a recipe for a lot of disaster, but it's hard not to feel like that's what they should do.
Oh yeah,
because they're so far behind. They feel so far behind.
Yeah. Skipping to that, it feels like that's what you should be doing, but we also have to, we'll get to like some of the downsides to skipping these steps here in a moment. But starting here in, you know, the 3 to 6 months of necessary expenses, like it doesn't, you know, yes, it's boring. It's just cash sitting there. It might do better if you were investing it. But if you need that cash, it is a piece, you know, very much peace of mind strategy to just have that ready to go. It's not fluctuating in value. High yield savings accounts are paying really great right now. They're at 5.1% or higher, you know, depending on where you're looking. You can get some savings on that savings, that additional, I always ask folks, like, you know, when we've opened up a high yield savings and we move some money in there, like, how did you like that deposit last month? It was nice, wasn't it? Like,
you don't even have to lift a finger.
Yeah, it's not going to make you rich, but like, depending on how much your emergency reserve is, like, that's a nice little bonus each month that, you know, right, you could use to continue to build savings with, or take somebody out to dinner, you know, who knows?
Yeah. So. And think about this, if it's a function of your expenses, like 3 to 6 mm-hmm. months of expenses, then just naturally your expenses are going to grow with inflation, because, you know, groceries mm-hmm. don't stay the same price. And so with that interest, it kind of keeps pace with that inflation. So it's like, you don't have to deposit anymore once you reach that point.
Yeah. So those are the basics to really just build off of and to strengthen your financial position. Like, if we've got a really healthy, like, the, you know, these steps, you know, a debt management plan, we've got our emergency savings on lock, we understand where money's going, cash flow wise, in and out, we're looking good. Because then we want to be thinking, not to take the mood down again, but we do need to be thinking about catastrophic stuff, protection for catastrophic stuff like insurance. So this is where a lot of employers will offer health insurance. So that's a no-brainer to opt into. Health insurance protects you from very unexpected large medical bills, which, you know, certain things can be surprising. You might think an ambulance ride to the hospital after a car accident isn't that expensive, but holy cow, it could be thousands of dollars. Thankfully, if we're building off of this pyramid, we have some emergency reserve for that, but health insurance can really help to kind of minimize how much we have to lean on our savings for, or lean on our cash flow for, when things are going awry.
That's right. Even though you might feel like you're very healthy, or your spouse and your family is very healthy, and they haven't had really a lot of scares recently or in their lifetime, it's really just there for protection of like the catastrophic situation a lot of times. Because it can only take one time where you're just really dipping into that emergency fund, which is why we have it there, but really kind of climbing out of a hole. And that feeling, and we've worked with clients that are kind of climbing out of a kind of a credit card hole, right? Because mm-hmm. of one big thing that happened. And mm-hmm. so it's kind of protecting the downside. There's risk minimization strategies out there from an investment standpoint, but this is like mm-hmm. one of the biggest risk mitigation strategies, especially when you spent all of your life earning, or I guess learning to earn the income mm-hmm. that you're going to earn, right?
Yeah. And like, to tie into health insurance, there's disability insurance, which I think is extremely important. Disability sounds really aggressive, but disability insurance, I would think about as paycheck insurance, paycheck protection. Because think about it, like, if you're sick or if you're injured and you're not able to work in the same capacity for one of those reasons, your paycheck is going to be affected. You're going to have only so much time off if you do have paid time off. So disability insurance, a lot of times employers provide this as well, or you could opt for independent coverage, but it steps in and it pays you your paycheck while you're out recovering and getting better. And I have my own policy, and I have had certain circumstances. Like, for example, I've never skied until 2 years ago, like skiing down a mountain in the snow.
Snow skiing, yeah.
Snow skiing, there we go. But as somebody in my 30s, I decided to go ahead and learn how to do this. Didn't take lessons. That was a bad idea. We should have taken lessons. I'm very much a person who is someone who likes to just go figure stuff out. And so I figured, like, oh, I'm going to figure this out. I didn't know where brakes were on skis. I didn't realize you had to like move your body back and forth. And like,
it's pizza, right? That's what they teach pizza. The kids, right? Pizza, pizza.
But when you're going so fast and you're not a kid, so you weigh a lot more. Like, pizza only gets you so far. So there were certain times, like, I was laying in the snow, like upside down or on my back. Thank the Lord I've got disability insurance, because
yeah,
it's really there to protect protect you if you're injured yourself, if something unexpected happens, because you are your own ATM.
Right. We're sitting at a desk all day. That's one thing. But most of the folks we work with are working with their hands every day, or they're walking around. You know, a lot of dentists have lower back problems because they're kind of hunched over all day, right? For us, the cost of disability is much cheaper than a dentist, right? Because obviously dentists earn a lot of income, physicians earn a lot of income, but also it takes a lot less for them not to be able to do their job. That's the key for a lot of the professions that require a lot of student loans, is make sure you get own occupation disability insurance. So that way, if, you know, you get osteoarthritis, you know, in your fingers, you might be able to do another job, but you definitely can't do dentistry if you're in pain all day, right? So yeah, definitely something to look out for.
Oh, an occupation. Yeah, that's really important. So we do have a resource on our website, studentloanplanner.com, where you could shop different disability policies to either, if you just need a whole policy because you're independent, or if you need to supplement your existing policy at work. Sometimes work policies only cover up to 50% or 60%. So individual policies can stack on top of that to get you closer to like your net income amount being received if you're out on claim. So just like auto insurance, right? That's another insurance, like property casualty, liability insurance, auto insurance. We hope we never have to use these things. But if it's not there, that's when we're really in a bad spot, because then we do have to self-insure. We are going to have to come out of pocket for these things. It's catastrophic not to have it. You know, hopefully it's a waste of money. That's a crappy way to, you know, think about it. But, you know, in a way, like, hopefully it is a waste of money. I don't hope I use my auto insurance this year, you know?
Yeah. And one other kind of tidbit of advice, not advice per se, but just a tip here. The larger your emergency savings, going back to one of the other foundational pieces, the larger your emergency savings, the higher your deductible can be on your auto insurance, because you have more cash to cover any claim, right? And so the larger your deductible, the cheaper your premium is. So think about that. So starting with the foundation, build your emergency savings. All of a sudden, you can increase your deductible and pay less per month when those things, or when you pay for your auto or liability insurance or whatever it might be.
Yeah. Yeah. The more healthy your foundation is, that emergency savings is, and your cash flow is, and your debt management skills,
yep,
you know, the more you can bear if there was some kind of a emergency where the deductible can be higher. So that makes your premiums a lot cheaper. That's a big part of what makes your premium more costly. It's kind of surprising too. Like, we were comparing disability insurance policies recently for a client, and like a 90-day waiting period compared to a 180-day waiting period. So that's like 3 to 6 months-ish. There was a huge difference in the monthly premiums. And so yeah, if somebody had like 6 months of reserve on hand, you know, if there was, heaven forbid, some kind of disability, like, they could save a lot on their disability insurance premiums. So those are some of the things that can help like reduce the cost of insurance. You want a good company for these things, mm-hmm, because you want them to pay out if you're going to need the coverage. But there's these little tips and tricks that you can do to minimize the insurance cost overall, so it's not so much of a, you know, a cost in your cash flow.
That's right. Yeah. And I think this is one of the last foundational pieces, but homeowners insurance, typically, you know, this is from my experience. I've had claims on my first home when our dishwasher had leaked and we had to completely gut our kitchen. And it was just an entire mess for probably about 3 or 4 months before we could actually use the kitchen again. But I went with the more discounted insurance, right? So I went with kind of like the cheapest option, and the customer service was definitely lacking in terms of how quickly they paid the claims, the responsiveness of the agent. Keep those things in mind when you're kind of shopping for homeowners insurance. Not only don't just go for the cheapest option, but also go for the highest rated option, especially in your area, because it is very local to the agent or the contact center in your area there. So just something to keep in mind, just from my personal experience, you know, maybe go a rung up from the cheapest option out there.
Right. Yeah. And same with like auto insurance. Like, I, this is not sponsored at all, but I do have USAA for myself and my family. And I was rear-ended years ago now, but I had USAA at the time. And all I did was call and just explain, hey, I just got hit. It wasn't my fault. I'm on the side of the highway waiting, you know, trying to wait for the tow truck to come. And all they asked was, you know, do you want us to take care of this? claim, or do you want this to be left to the person who hit you? Do you want your that insurance company to come in and take care of this? And I was like, I think I want you to take care of it.
Yeah.
And they did. Like, it was the most seamless thing ever. Like, they set me up with a rental car. They sent, you know, they shipped off the car, you know, towed off the car to go get it fixed, communicated with me all along the way. I paid my deductible.
Yep.
It was just a really, really great experience for a horrible situation compared to like some situations that I've heard from clients or other folks where it was like pulling teeth to try to get them to cover stuff. And it was, you know, that's what it was for.
That's so. Right. Yeah. So think about what they're doing with the premiums you're paying. They're also paying their staff and their support staff. Mm-hmm. And typically the higher compensation you pay people, you get higher quality people, right? So think about like the whole supply chain of that premium there, and that's what you're paying for.
Mm-hmm. And fun tidbit, we will have an episode in the future deep diving into insurance with a property and casualty professional. So I'm going to have that coming down the pipeline if you're interested in some more of this information and maybe some crazy stories. Who knows? So protection, not a fun part of the plan. The last thing we didn't mention, life insurance. So life insurance, pretty self-explanatory. It is there to protect your family. So you're not going to be here to, you know, reap the benefits of it, but it will leave you sleeping better at night to know that your spouse or your kids are taken care of, to have that in place. There's some rules of thumb with life insurance, and it always depends on like how much you should be considering getting, what type of insurance to get generally, how long it should be covering you for. But any thoughts on life insurance before we move on?
Really the main reason for life insurance is to replace your income if you were to pass away. So mm-hmm. if you don't have anyone necessarily depending off your income right now, maybe the need isn't necessarily there as much as, you know, just paying off your debts, which is the number one or the number two mm-hmm. reason to have life insurance. Just in general, we tend to recommend term life insurance, but that's maybe for another episode here. But yeah. There's definitely reasons for that, but definitely don't get oversold on permanent life insurance and pay monster mm-hmm. premiums versus saving or investing.
Yeah, there's definitely a time and a place for permanent insurance, but the vast majority of folks, like 9.5 out of 10 people listening to this, are probably going to want term for the cost-effective coverage, for it just being there if you need it. Hopefully you don't. Again, remember, hopefully that's a waste of money that yep. you're still here at the end of the term. But it can really just protect your family. That's what life insurance is more about. And disability, all these other insurance we were talking about, protect you while you're here and protect your finances while you're here.
Right.
That was it. That was the boring foundational side of things, right? This is really what we just have to lay out, get right. And this is a lot of times the vast majority of what we work on in the first maybe year of a financial planning relationship with somebody is getting a lot of these things in place if they're not already, or double checking that they're in place and making sure that they're looking good. Next, we start moving along. Not to say that we can't move along to the next step of wealth accumulation and saving until everything on that foundational stage is done, but it is definitely something that there has to be a plan for those foundational pieces before we start moving on to saving and investing and some of the more fun stuff. So
that's right. So what we just talked about is kind of those things that help you sleep at night. And then once you're sleeping at night, then you can really have a good workout after that.
Yeah, right. So maintaining yourself, getting that foundation laid, we're doing leg day, we're looking at things holistically. So now we're going to start to grow. So this is where we could start talking about saving for goals, saving for retirement, education planning, if we have kiddos in the mix. This is usually what a lot of people want to talk about because it's way more fun than talking about life insurance, right? Of course. Of course it's more fun. Accumulation, this stage of the pyramid, is for the dreamers, the next step, like what we're looking forward to. You know, rules of thumb with saving. So saving for retirement, let's talk about that first. I think some low-hanging fruit for getting started with saving for retirement. We talk a lot about like getting the match at your employer if they offer it, which the match is just how much they will put into your retirement if you're putting a certain amount into your retirement. And a lot of times we recommend doing that even when we're trying to get some of those like foundational pieces in place. Like that makes sense to just go ahead and get that done so we can get that extra compensation for your future retirement years. But then from there, then we start to need to figure out, okay, well, we know that retirement's going to be down the line. We know it's far away, right? Do you get that a lot with your clients where it's like, I can't even think about retirement right now.
I know.
It's just,
yeah. It's like we're trying to pinpoint a number 30 years from now. Mm-hmm. And we're like,
right.
Oh, by the time you're 55, 60 years old, this is how much net worth you mm-hmm. should have. It's really kind of impossible to really project that, but we can have a directional number when we do our planning.
Yeah. Yeah. The main thing about retirement planning, like getting started with that earlier, is that we've got a lot of time on our side, which could be really beneficial because time sometimes can beat market return. Like if we're looking at somebody who started investing, Sim and I did an episode on this recently, but investing like later in life, but saving a lot, they might be at the same spot or worse off than someone who started saving, you know, maybe less, but way earlier in their career. Time just really helps you out. So the earlier we're in the market, the better. So saving for retirement, I think that should start to be a priority when we've got those foundational pieces in play. We're starting to move up in our pyramid. The maximum that you can contribute to retirement is $23,000 this year for 2024. That changes from year to year. We could start to pinpoint, like you said, figure out what kind of retirement do we want? It's not exactly a number. It's not exactly we need $1 million in the bank or we need $2 million mm-hmm. in the bank. It's more so like what kind of life and what kind of income do you need to be living off of in those retirement years? And can our assets at the point of us like leaving work support that until you pass away? Which again, we also don't know when we're going to pass away. So it's all like, all of this is made up, right? They're all so assumptions.
Fundamentally, we're making educated guesses on the future and we're using history to help us make those educated guesses. And then, financial planning in general, when we're talking about, especially talking about retirement planning, you can kind of think about that retirement date as like your North Star. And every time you meet with a planner, you're just going to kind of course correct. You're going to kind of take out your compass. And if we're just a little bit underfunded or overfunded, we're just going to course correct a little bit. And that's all it is. And as we kind of work together, we're going to have more preciseness with what that number should be. But at the end of the day, retirement, all it is building up your assets large enough to be able to draw from for the rest of your life. And for the rest of your life is kind of we don't know that number. We don't know how long you're going to live, but we plan for 90 at least in our financial plans. And, you know, if someone has longevity on their side, maybe we'll plan for 95, 100 years old. Who knows how many centaurians are going to be out there by the time I'm 70, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that number, I guess, seems to get bigger and bigger in terms of how many 100-year-old folks are out there.
Yep. I like that analogy, like the North Star and like continuing to toggle, getting closer and closer to where we're going. Because that is what it feels like on our side, like our planning side is like every time we get together with a client, every time we're rerunning projections, we're getting closer and closer to what we think is more and more accurate or more and more safe to say, yeah, we're going to be fine, you know, when we get there.
And a lot of dentists that we work with, it's kind of funny, but not really that funny, but they'll just be fresh out of dental school and their number one goal is to stop working as soon as possible.
Yeah.
I'm like, you just started. And then that goal changes, right? So like maybe they just purchased a practice and they're kind of going through the first couple of years and it's just been a massive headache, right? Working with everything. Mm-hmm. But then they're kind of in a coast kind of situation where operations are kind of smoothing out. And they're like, hey, maybe I can do this for a little bit longer than I thought, right? Maybe that's not my number one goal because their practice is, you know, generating a good income. And so that North Star is always going to change. And that's the beauty about working with people in their 30s and 40s and maybe late 20s is the fact that, you know, if you asked yourself 10 years ago what the most important thing was to you, it's probably something way different than it is today. And so it's always constantly evolving.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to know too, is like, your goals can change and the plan can pivot. Mm-hmm. And then going along the lines of savings, like saving for a specific need, this is a huge part of what we work with folks on in the clientele that we typically work with earlier on in their career. we're years out from retirement, 10, 15, 20 or more years away from retirement, saving for specific goals like buying a house, starting a family, buying a practice. Those things are really fun to dream about and plan for, and they fit into the plan in this accumulation stage where, again, not to say that we can't start working towards these things as we're getting like that foundational layer worked on and checked off. That foundation is really important to have in place in anticipation of those goals coming to fruition. If we're wanting to buy a house, we need that foundation to make sure that if the water heater blows up one day, like in the new house that we just bought, we've got the savings to cover it. Or, you know, if you've got bats in your attic, whatever it is, like we need to have that foundation. So that's what's fun about this accumulation stage. It's like dreaming about the stuff that we want and starting to save for those things and put those savings in different spots to help us get there as efficiently and as quickly as possible.
That's right.
But it's also hard because like these goals can sometimes compete with each other.
Yeah.
Right.
I would say that's the number one advice that I'll suggest to someone that's going through this phase is prioritize. Let's start with the first thing. And then once that's on track to be accomplished, then let's move on to the next, because it's so easy to want to do five different things in the next 10 years. Yeah. And it's like, okay, where do I start? And it's like, let's get hyper-focused on like that number one thing and then make sure that's accomplished. Cause you told me, you know, you tell me that that's the most important thing, and let's get hyper-focused on that and then keep moving down the prioritization ladder there.
Yeah. Maybe a good way to visualize like prioritizing your goals. And I'll ask clients this a lot. I'll say, well, I know we want to do this, this, and this. We could either save for this, this, and this with our cash flow coming in. You know, it's kind of like a spaghetti strainer. We pour our savings in or our water into the spaghetti strainer, and it's going to spit out in those three different directions in these small little holes. Like we're going to have some small savings going towards each of these goals over time. Or we could take a funnel approach and pour that water down the funnel to each goal and like check off each goal maybe faster. So I ask clients that a lot, like, how would you like to go about it? And there's not a wrong answer. I have had folks say, you know, I want to see progress towards each of these things. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's totally fine. I personally like the funnel approach because I like checking things off. And typically the things that I'm working towards can be like chronologically in a certain order, like where timing wise, it makes sense to focus on one and move on to the next and move on to the next, something like that.
And the great thing about these goals, because they're not necessarily retirement goals, is that the accounts that you invest in for these goals aren't permanently tied to that goal. So if something changes, and let's say instead of that new house that you want to buy, instead you want a vacation home that's maybe less costly, it's not like you have to start saving for that vacation home. Your priorities have shifted and you're going to use the same type of account. You just kind of shift the money, earmark the money for something else, right? So there's no like permanency to the planning there.
Mm-hmm. So accumulation stage, saving, growing assets, saving for education funding, that's a whole other basket of worms. What is it? Can of worms? I think we'll have an episode at some point on education savings to dive into that a little bit too. But then what comes later on is we're in retirement, we're living off of those retirement assets. So we have retirement distribution strategy, which maybe you've never even heard of that term, distribution strategy, but that's because we haven't been to the point yet where we need to start distributing assets. You know, that's later on down the line. You know, how do we plan for that retirement income? What accounts are we drawing from? How are we going to ensure or help protect our income for as long as we're going to live? How are we going to protect our spouse or, you know, the things that we care about? That's a lot of the retirement planning, which there are planners out there where that's all they do. Like they only work with retirees to help them really manage their investments and manage that income distribution and take care of things that happen just later on in retirement.
Yeah, I would say that's the majority of the planners out there. The traditional financial advisor,
interestingly, right?
We call it the retirement red zone. So 55 and over, making sure they have a solid plan before they retire. So that way they are efficiently, from a tax standpoint, efficiently withdrawing from their assets and have the right type of accounts out there to live the rest of their life.
Yeah. So an extremely important part of the financial planning journey. Of course, that is like not the end of the road, but that is like what we're working towards for 30 years in our accumulation stage. with that being said, there are different advisors out there that do different things. So you have to also pair yourself with who is helping you in your stage where you're at, meeting you where you're at right now. That's a lot of why, like, a lot of the consultants on Student Loan Planner get along, because we all really felt like, you know, hey, the financial planning industry is really geared towards folks that already have money and that are already at retirement. But what about the people like on the way trying to get there and do the right thing?
I used to work with a firm that, you know, that was their bread and butter, was retirement, or, you know, the retirement red zone age. And too often I would meet with someone that was just on the edge of having enough money saved up or invested. Inside, I'm like, hey, I wish I would have met with this person 30 years ago, because we would have had 10 times as much, right? Because we would have had their financial planning pyramid set up in their 30s, right?
Yeah. I'm excited to see, like, as we grow as planners, like, I'm excited to see folks in our generation that have been working with planners and that have had a lot of this financial education from the get-go, because I think we're, you know, in this time, day and age, like, I think we definitely need it with the situation being what it is with student loans and with where inflation is and with where the housing market is right now for our generation. But I'm really curious to see, like, when we're 70, when we're having coffee one day, Jake, later on down the road, I want to look at some stats on, like, how people in our generation are doing compared to maybe how people in previous generations had done with their, like, wealth building. And that'll be, for nerds like us, that'll be a great combo, right?
Yeah. Morgan Housel is an awesome financial, he's a podcaster, but also he's an author of a few books out there. He had a podcast the other day. He said, the financial industry is, it's called cyclical learning, because history tends to repeat itself, right? So there's certain like depression eras, there's certain economic boom eras. But if you kind of look at the same problems we had 100 years ago from a financial, like, learning perspective, it kind of repeats itself. But then like the professions we work with are cumulative learning, meaning that folks didn't believe in germs however many, you know, 100 plus years ago. And now doctors, of course, are all protected from all of that because they know germs can cause certain things.
Yeah. And so, or they believed in, like, bloodletting, or, like, letting blood.
Yeah. It's like lobotomies and stuff like that. But chances are we're going to fast forward 70 years from now, and people are going to continue to kind of let emotions get the best of them with investing. And our housing prices right now might not seem so high 70 years from now, because our generation had it easy, right? Because six generations from now, they're going to be like, oh, you guys had it easy, right? So I think it's going to tend to repeat itself. And that's, which is why, like, an accountability partner, someone to separate, like, those same mistakes we've seen over centuries, or not even centuries, decades, what I would say, don't kind of repeat themselves for people.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I'm just thinking about how, it seems like every generation, it's like, well, they had it easier, or they had it easier, or they had this. Pretty interesting. But yeah, I think the beauty of financial planning is that it really is an ongoing process. Either you're your own financial planner, or you're working with someone who does that for a living, and you're getting advice and help along the way and accountability along the way. And your finances are totally your picture. Like, it's totally you and what you want and what you're working towards. I think in financial planning, like, we always say, it depends. Every answer is, it depends. It's just because everybody's situation is so different. So where these, I think this foundational, like, pyramid that we're talking about, growing this foundation here, I think this is very translatable to anybody. But exactly when you accomplish each of these steps, or when you go back and revisit these steps, when you start to fine tune certain things in, like, the plan, like, that can totally depend on your situation and what your goals are and what you're working towards. And that's why we ask a ton of questions. Like, I swear our job, like, if you ask us a question as a client, like, well, how much do I need to save for retirement? We're going to ask you probably 10 questions back. Yeah. Like, well, okay, let's visualize this. What do you want to look like in retirement? Like,
and if we didn't ask those questions, then we wouldn't be doing our jobs, right? Because you can get the same information. You can ask ChatGPT or Google the same questions. I heard a good saying that said, if it was an information problem, meaning, like, if it was a lack of information that was the problem, well, we would all have six-pack abs, because we can just Google how to get six-pack abs, right? But it's more of a human behavior problem. It's an emotional problem. We have so many different things that kind of pull us in different directions, like kids and jobs and all of these things going on.
Stress.
That kind of stress. Yeah, it pulls us away from following that narrow path, that straight and narrow path of flowing up the pyramid in our own way. That's where a good financial planner asking the right questions really comes into play, because, you know, I think one of the main value adds is that they're not you. You don't, they don't live your life that where you have a bunch of things that are pulling you in other directions.
Yeah, we could stay a little unbiased there. And then we don't have the emotions that you would have in those certain decisions too, or in those questions that should be asked. So working with a qualified advisor. So if you're someone who wants massive biceps, go find a bicep trainer, right? Go find somebody who can really give you those investment gains that you want.
Or if you want to run a mile in less than 6 minutes, go find a running coach.
Yes.
But
yeah.
If you want a true good personal trainer when it comes to your finances, go see
everything, your biceps, your abs, your cardio, for like the whole picture. If you want to feel healthy financially, totally healthy financially, then I think working with a comprehensive planner, we recommend a CFP, certified financial planner. They're kind of like the doctors in the financial planning space, if you will. They've got the knowledge about all the different areas of financial planning and also how to pull all of those areas together, because that's what's important, is not looking at them all independently. We will at some point, but pulling those together as part of the bigger picture is what's important there.
Yeah.
I think that rounds out our conversation for our planning pyramid. And next week, we're going to be chatting a little bit more about priority order of savings. I've got Scotty coming on with me next week, which should be pretty fun. But anything we left out or anything you want to mention before we pop off?
So just to recap, so we've got our foundation built with awareness of our cash flow. We've got a good read on our debt management. We're not having really high interest debt. We've got emergency savings built up. We're kind of moving our way up the pyramid. And then once we have a complete pyramid where we've kind of covered all of these areas, all of these layers of the pyramid, and I was talking to Megan about this before the pod, but like, no matter what happens, think about this. Well, no matter what happens from a financial perspective, you're going to be okay, because we have the protections in place. We have the investments growing. We have the estate planning set up, which we didn't touch too much on that, but that's the top of the pyramid, right? A lot of times. But this is like the key to just like feeling completely awesome about your financial life, so you can worry about other things going on in your life.
Yep. Yeah. Feeling protected, feeling healthy, feeling like, you know, whatever happens, you will be able to handle it. Like, that's a really great place to be in with anything, right?
Yeah.
But with your money, especially, because money can be a really stressful thing for folks. But thank you so much, Jake, for joining me today and covering the financial planning pyramid and talking through some of these hierarchy order types of conversations.
Thanks for having me, Megan. And I would just echo, like, friends, don't let friends skip leg day. If you're going to the gym with your friend and you notice that they're back to biceps and you haven't seen them touch the squat rack, say something to them.
Yeah.
And also ask them about their cash flow.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Jake. Thanks for listening in, everybody. And hope you have a really great weekend. We'll catch you next week.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life for a price much better than you ever dreamed possible? If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.